Today is Thursday, December the 8th, 2016. We're going to hear Reb Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parsha Vayetze.
I'd like to wish all of you a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos. We're going to be davening Maariv just a few minutes after the class. Just so you know, there's a couple people that are missing from the class. Marty Zimmerman, he's sitting show. He lost his father recently, and also Dr. Goldstein, who unfortunately lost his mother recently.
His mother.
Goldstein's mother. And just to let you know, for those people who have brought some paper goods and some plasticware and stuff, thank you so much. Thanks for your generosity. I believe the class is being sponsored. Is it being sponsored? Mm-hmm. No, it's not being sponsored. Okay. Mm. All right.
All right. Usually when I speak about the Sedra, I start off with something in the Sedra. Here, I'll bring the Sedra in the middle, and I'll start off with something else. There was a certain group at the time of the first exile, in time of Sancharev, actually that was even before that, and they were called the Kusim. So another name for them is the Shamranim. According to our sages, the Kusim, the Shamranim, were a nation, a group of people from another nation, but Sancharev, when he came and he captured many, many countries, so he would take the people from one area and place them in another area. So the Kusim, according to our sages, were non-Jews who were settled in Eretz Yisrael, for the most part in the areas where the 10 tribes had resided. Certainly later on, it was in the area of Shechem to a large degree, and these non-Jews, they continued worshipping their idols in the manner that they did beforehand. And by the way, this is not only mentioned in the Gemara, this is mentioned in many of the history books that we have, Josephus, even in the history books of some of the nations. I did some checking on it, and it's interesting when you look at the ancient history books. They more or less, the way they explain it is very, very similar to the way the Gemara explains it, although later historians try to explain it differently. So they continued worshipping their idols, and then they were attacked by lions. In other words, they didn't live in fortified cities. They lived in areas, and they got to remember these areas that after the Churban, after the destruction, there were animals roaming everywhere. We know there was a fox roaming on the site of the Beis HaMikdash. So you can imagine, it wasn't like the cities of today. And so you can imagine that in the area, if it was the area of Shechem, wherever it might have been, the wild animals, these areas became wilderness. So they were attacked by lions. And as a result, I have to say that they could teach our present generation a lesson or two. When we encounter catastrophe, we attribute it to all kinds of coincidences and political maneuvers and whatever it is. But they began to make some kind of evaluation. Why did this happen? And they decided that it's time to recognize God. And as a result, they started. They adopted a lot of the Jewish practices, and they started serving God. Not only that, but because they identified, because of where they settled, they identified with the 10 tribes, specifically with the tribes that were descendants of Yosef. So they asked, they sent to one of the settlements of the tribes, of the 10 tribes, to send them someone who would give them guidance. And they sent them a Kohen. This is all mentioned in the Nevi'im. They sent him a Kohen, and who so to say taught them, and he arranged for their conversion, and they underwent conversion. However, the Gemara tells us that they still, at least initially, they continued with some of their previous religious practices after conversion, almost like many of the conversions today. Anyway, so they continued with some of their practices. It's possible that they just didn't understand and that they didn't know. I guess that would be different than the conversions today. But it's possible. I don't know. That's not really discussed. They were not great scholars at that point in any case. So it could be they just didn't know. And so there was a dispute. There was a dispute whether their conversion, after the fact, of course you weren't allowed to convert them for many reasons, but after the fact, was their conversion good or not? So there's a discussion, a disagreement in the Gemara. And there's one opinion in the Gemara, that seems to be the accepted opinion, that the conversion was considered good. Tosfos says, how is it possible that they continued in their old practices and the conversion was still considered good? So Tosfos is of the opinion that the one who says the conversion is good felt that generations later they underwent the second conversion, because there's no way possible that the first conversion could be considered a valid conversion, because they continued in their pagan practices. Even though Eselakim Haya Yireim, this is the expression in the Pasuk, they feared God, the Eselohehem, and their former gods, Hayovdim, they served. They feared God, and they served their idols. So Tosfos is of the opinion that that the those who say the conversion was good, it's only because they underwent a later conversion. However, from other Rishonim, it appears, no, the argument is over the first conversion. Whether after the fact there was some validity to the first conversion or not. And this went on for hundreds of years. It stretched, they wanted to participate in the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, and Ezra did not let them. Ezra told them that, you know, do your own thing. Don't get involved with us. And so they went to Har Gerizim. Sometimes if you, in the old days, today it's dangerous to go to Har Gerizim. But in the old days, after the Six-Day War, you could take a tour of Har Gerizim. You would see the ruins of their temple. And they see, in those ruins you're allowed to walk in. Hours, you're not allowed to walk in. Okay, anyway, so on the Mount Gerizim, they built a temple. Actually, according to what's recorded, they tried to make it very similar to the temple in Jerusalem. And they practiced their own religion. Of course, they believed that that was the original temple, which, of course, both archaeologically, historically, and religiously, it wasn't true, but whatever it is. Okay. And for hundreds of years, we had two separate groups. You had the Kusim, and the Shomronim, whatever you want to call them, and you had those who followed. Now, they did not believe in the oral tradition. They did not believe in the oral tradition. They only believed in the Torah Shebichtav, in the written Torah. And that's, matter of fact, their version of the written Torah, according to many, was the foundation for the Old Testament as it's part of the Christian Bible. In other words, the Old Testament is not a real English translation of our Bible. Just in case you want to save money, so I'm telling you ahead of time, don't waste your money. It was a translation with certain differences. It was a translation of the Bible of the Shomronim, and the Septuagint that we have today, which is not the original Septuagint, is also based on their Bible. That was pointed out by Reb Chaim Heller. Okay, so this is the. So for many years, then, toward the end of the time of the Gemara, they found in Har Gerizim, in Mount Gerizim, they found a Dmus Yonah, an idol formed like a dove, you know, a bird, like a dove. And apparently the Shomron and the Kusim were worshipping this figure. And the question is, where did this figure come from? So Tosfos says that Tosfos and Neva cites a Medrash that this was Lovin's god, the Driftgestalt, and was buried in the end of this week's Sedra. If anybody looked over the Sedra, the whole Sedra yet, usually I speak at the beginning of the Sedra. Anyway, so this was the god of Lavan that was buried, and the Chachamim gathered together, and the Chachamim said, even according to those who felt that they were Jewish, the Chachamim said that they removed the way Rabbeinu Yonah, the way the Karen Orah explains it, the Sanhedrin had the ability to remove the Kedusha, the sanctity, remove their sanctity. In other words, even according to the opinion that they were Jewish, the Sanhedrin or the Chachmei HaMesorah, whichever, you didn't have a Sanhedrin at that point, it was the Chachmei HaMesorah, but the Chachmei HaMesorah removed their sanctity. And the Karen Orah says, the Chachmei HaMesorah, we don't have, that was until the time the Gemara was completed. We don't have Chachmei HaMesorah today, although there are a lot of people that claim to be. They had the power to remove their sanctity. Now, I was always troubled. I was intrigued. Why is it they waited all these years to remove their Kedushas Yisrael, their sanctity? They removed it. Why? Because they caught them worshipping the figure of a dove. Because they were worshipping an idol. Well, when they first converted, they were also worshipping idols. Why did they wait hundreds of years to remove their sanctity? So, I have two answers to the question. First answer really doesn't have to do with this sutra. Now, there are many historians that claim, and it's obviously erroneous, because not only the archaeological evidence is against it, but it goes against the Gemara, whatever, but there are many historians who claim to have an altogether different perspective of who the Kusim were. And they say that the Kusim were members of the 10 tribes that were missing. In other words, our sages tell us, and archaeologically, all the documents that have been found, or the engravings that have been found, have proven that the Chachamim were right. But there are historians who claim that it wasn't non-Jews, it was Jews who were members of the 10 tribes. Okay. Now, but I decided I'm going to check the reports. I'm not a geneticist, so I can't say that I did a very thorough job. I just took a quick look at the, today they do genetic testing about everybody, you know. They advertise it on TV. I wouldn't advise any of you to do it. You might find out you're an American Indian or something. So, okay. They did genetic testing, and they found out that there is a certain mixture, For the main part, it's non-Jews, but there is a genetic mixture there's some similarities to the Jewish, to this. It could be attributed to the fact that it was as a result of the Aseres HaShvatim, we see that there was some contact between them from the Nevi'im, from the prophets, and it could be that it was from a later period of time. But let's assume that there was some mixture with the Aseres HaShvatim. So we could say that the reason the Chachamim initially were hesitant to declare them as non-Jews was because they didn't want to push aside, thereby, since they had conversion, and there were some people from the Aseres HaShvatim, from the 10 tribes, mixed with them. So the Chachamim didn't want even though, because they would be pushing Jews who had, whose ancestors were Jewish, and they didn't want to do it at that point. But what we find is, so why later did they do it? We find that some of the communities of the Aseres HaShvatim became very troubling to the Jewish people, so much to the degree, not all the Aseres HaShvatim, but there was a place called Tarmud, and there was a number of people in Tarmud that were from the Aseres HaShvatim, and the Chachamim removed their sanctity, according to the Karen Ora, because they presented all kinds of problems. Many of them were Mamzerim, whatever it was, so that... So in other words, the whole reason they didn't remove the sanctity, the Dusha Shishrael of the Kusim, was because of the Aseres HaShvatim that were connected with them. But then there was a period of time where some of the Aseres HaShvatim became problematic themselves, so they removed it. That was one answer, I thought. But then, I think there is another answer, and that would be based on studying the end of this week's Sedra. If you take a look at the end of this week's Sedra, where when Lavan makes his covenant with Yaakov, he takes a bunch of stones, piles them up, and they make a covenant. And there's a very interesting expression. The Mefarshim all discuss it. Now, interesting thing is, Lavan seems somewhat threatened by Yaakov. We understand why Yaakov is threatened by Lavan. But Lavan is insistent, I don't want you coming over this border to cause me trouble either. The question is, why? What trouble would Yaakov cause Lavan? It's an interesting, my uncle mentioned, he once said, why is it, how is it possible that Rivka could grow up to be the way she was in the house? So my uncle said that the maidservant of that maidservant, the one who they took care of her, fed her, she went together with she went together with Rivka. So in other words, my uncle suggested, and it's a very interesting theory, that, listen, Avraham left that area, and Avraham had a very big influence. So it's not that there were people that Avraham trained. There was sort of like a spiritual underground there. Dvorah was one of the, that's why the Torah goes and speaks about Dvorah's death and everything. There was this, Avram left a spiritual underground. And that's how you can have a Rivka, that's how you can have a Rachel, that's how you can have a Leah growing up in the midst. In the midst of, I'll give you an example. You had small communities in Russia of Jews that remained loyal to Torah. How is it possible? But there was a spiritual underground. Not many. There was a spiritual underground there, and probably after Lavan saw what happened to his daughters, what happened, he thought that his daughters, which is true, stole his gods and everything. And so he was hoping that spiritual underground, which probably did, after a while, it came to an end. He didn't want anybody to come to re-give it a new life. Once Yaakov left, And he's no longer, so once Yaakov left, so he felt threatened. He felt threatened by Yaakov, that Yaakov might reestablish some kind of relationship with that spiritual underground. So he also felt threatened. He also felt threatened. But in any case, but what was the, he says, Elokei Avraham, Velahe Nochar Yishpitu Beinenu, Elokei Avihem. So the God of Abraham, that's Kadosh, Elohe Nochar, the gods of Venochar, that was Avram's brother, who, and then the gods of their fathers, Mitchila Ovde Avodazora Hayu Avaseinu. So he, what did he do? He combined the gods of Avram, the god of Avram, with the gods of Nachar, with the gods of their ancestors, of Mitchila Ovde Avodazora Hayu Avaseinu. Love, it wasn't that Lavan didn't believe in God. You see, God appears to him, and that has a big impact upon him. And to a certain degree, this might be the problem with Bilam also. In other words, they believed in God, but they continued to serve their Avodah Zarah. But I think there is a difference. When the Kusim started their came to Israel and they adopted Judaism, but they continued some of their practices. But it was two different religions. I know a certain lady who went through a false conversion. I was told about her that Shabbos she would go to shul and Sunday she went to church. She had a lot of time. Maybe they played bingo there. I don't know. Anyway, it was two separate religions. So okay, they probably did not have much knowledge and all that, but Lavan had a different approach. Lavan's approach was no. He combined the god of Avram with the gods of Nachar, with the gods of their ancestors. It was all one religion for him. Now, for a non-Jew, by the way, there is an opinion, you know, non-Jew is not allowed to worship idols, but a non-Jew is not allowed to worship idols, but there's an opinion that for a non-Jew, let's say, who believes in the Trinity, so for him it's not idolatry, but for a Jew, that would be considered idolatry. And what's interesting is, you know, you find by Eliyahu, even by Yehoshua before he died, he told the Jews, either worship the idols or worship God. Don't do both. And Eliyahu HaNavi, he says, "Im ha'Baal Elohim, l'chu acharav. If the Baal is God, follow him. But if God is God," why? Because there were Jews that did both. In other words, from the Jewish perspective, for a Jew, it is more dangerous to have a combination of idolatry and worship of God than just worshiping the idolatry. Because if just idolatry, eventually they'll be separated. But here it could come to falsification of the religion. So in other words, there are really three steps. In other words, worshiping of God is what we want. But even worse than worshiping both idols and God is combining the two in one religion. Because that's a falsification of our religion. It's the worst falsification because it makes idolatry as part of the Jewish religion. And that was the danger of Lavan. For Lavan, it's not so bad. For Lavan himself. For Lavan himself, it's not so bad. Because Lavan wasn't a Jew. But Lavan wanted Habanim Banai v'Habanos Benosai. It's not that he wanted a complete separation. He didn't want Yaakov coming over to have an influence in his area. But he wanted them to still identify with him. And identification with him didn't mean give up serving God. You could serve God, but you have to combine it. You have to combine it with idolatry. Now, and I think, in a sense, if you look at the history, and I purposely looked to check, the Christian church, when did the idea of a Trinity forming a religion of a partnership between God and other things of worship? When did that start? At the end of the first century, it started, but it didn't become solid in the Christian church till the end of the third century. Now, in other words, and you have to understand that period of time later on, is when we know that the Chachamim, there are Medrashim that talk about, they write about it in hidden forms in the Gemara, but there was a certain threat. Because Christianity has its origin in Judaism, and there was a certain threat. The original Christians, to a large degree, were Jews, and a large part of the Christian practice, of the original Christian practice, was based on the Jewish practices. It wasn't the same thing, and that presented a much greater threat than the idolatrous religion of old, because that was originally the Christian religion wanted to say, this is Judaism. It was a falsification of the Jewish religion. So once the Chachamim saw that not only they worshipped idols, but it wasn't based anymore on their ancient practice. It was based on Lavan. It was based on Lavan, who identified Habanim Banai v'Habanos Benosai. Your descendants are my descendants. We say, Paro lo gozar el escharim. Paro wanted to destroy only the males. Lavan wanted to destroy everybody. Where do we see that Lavan wanted to destroy everybody? Because he said, Habanim Banai v'Habanos Benosai. Your sons are my sons, your daughters are my daughters. He wanted to destroy the Jewish people. How did he want to destroy the Jewish people? By falsification, by creating one religion. By having the idolatry and the worship of God as one religion of Elohei Abraham and Elohei Nachor together. The falsification of Judaism represents the greatest threat. A much greater threat than the idol worshiping. Throughout the period of the prophets, you saw how strong idol worshipping was, but that did not represent the same threat because that was that the initial Christian religion, because that was presented as Judaism. That was presented as Judaism. That represents the biggest threat. So in order to show a lack of tolerance, and that's what we have to have, a lack of tolerance for you know, I always mention, Thant said at my graduation, the Secretary General of the UN, he said, let Buddhists be better Buddhists, let Muslims be better Muslims, let Christians be better Christians, let Jews be better Jews. We can agree 100%, but they have to be Muslims, they have to be Buddhists, they have to be Christians. But if they present their religion as Judaism, then it represents the biggest threat of all. So that's why the Chachamim removed their Kedushas Yisrael. They worshipped idols beforehand. They worshipped idols beforehand, but it was a separate religion beforehand. But now, when it was based on the idols of Lavan, and Lavan identified himself, he said, Habanim Banai, Babanus Benosai, and he equates the God of Abraham with the gods of Nachar. So that represented the greatest threat. So the Chachamim felt under those circumstances, their Kedushas Yisrael had to be removed. Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Your uncle said that Lavan was prepared to kill him.
Sounds like Islam.
He didn't know the truth with him.